instructed to bring 5 extra copies. But I'm assuming, of course, that the hearings panel has read this already.
Yes.
Good. My name's Julian House. I'm here on behalf of the Environmental Society, the Physical Environmental Society. I'm here to talk about two issues in relation to Chapter 1 today. And I won't read it all because you've read it, but I'll hit some key points. Just going to the second paragraph, part 1.6.16, public notification of the source consent application. The final sentence in that paragraph, the court is an important check and balance on the resource consent process. And as I said at the council meeting last week, even the best councils don't get all their decisions right. No council will ever get all its decisions right. This is why the process was of public notification and appeal was set up, so that the public can correct the odd time when council gets decisions wrong, or slightly wrong. Moving down to the next section, the third bullet point, or number 3, the last few words, the consent authority must now decide whether adverse effects would have or were likely to have effects that were more than minor. That's the test that has to be met now under the revised act. Now, moving on to page 2, after the amendments, the bottom line remains that if council has doubts that adverse effects of an application could be greater than minor, it should publicly notify. If there's any doubt about that, it should publicly notify, particularly in our sensitive landscapes around here. And I've highlighted that again in underlined on the bullet point under section 95A. The activity will have or is likely to have adverse effects on the environment that are more than minor. That's the test. Now, the next paragraph. In reality, the minor effects test has been retained in the Act, and this is a very tough test. Skipping to page 3, about a third of the way down. And here I'm dealing at 1.6.18 with the Society's proposed wording that it's seeking for 1.6.18 in the proposed district plan. And the wording, the final sentence, in the case of subdivision and or development within outstanding natural landscape or on outstanding natural features, non-notification will only occur in very exceptional cases. Yeah. And the next paragraph, which is the key really. Obviously, if successful applications in outstanding natural landscape and on outstanding natural features can only occur in exceptional cases, that's what the plan says, then non-notification of applications must be even less likely to occur. Hence, the very exceptional wording. It has to be stronger. It's a clear logic there. I move on to discuss an example of how badly council sometimes gets it wrong. That's the Longview Environmental Trust resource consent application near Glendon Bay. Discussing that example, I'll just pick out a couple of bits. One of the residential building platforms was proposed to be situated high up on ice-sculpted hills beside the lake and visible from a number of public places. And further on, this was atop the rocky Roche Moutonne platform. Now, that statement alone should have triggered public notification. Page 4, first paragraph. There could never be certainty of outcome in terms of adverse effects for a residential development in a sensitive location such as this situated within ONL. Quite incredible that it wasn't publicly notified. And further down the page, when council fails to publicly notify an application, that patently should have been publicly notified. It is a statutory failure by council to correctly administer the district plan. Final paragraph. The message needs to be sent out to developers and landowners that non-notification hearings for subdivision and development in outstanding natural landscape and on outstanding natural features will occur only in very exceptional cases, per the wording suggested by the Society. Now, that's the end of that issue. And the second issue I'm here to talk about is the building outline issue, page 5, part 176 of the PDP. And I won't read it all again, but it's the Society's experience that the erection of poles is a crucial guide to potential adverse effects of subdivision and development in rural areas. I can't stress that enough. Yeah. Now, so we see the wording's been changed in the district plan, proposed plan. Quite why it's been changed at all, I'm surprised it's been changed. Yeah. Council may request that poles are erected. Yeah. That's not strong enough. Yeah. All we're seeking is the retention of the current wording in the plan. And you're going to hear that a lot from me tomorrow as well. Yeah. Any applicant for resource consent to establish a building in the rural general zone, or you could call it the rural zone under the new plan, and the rural living zones shall erect poles, and so on. Yeah. And that's simply the wording that exists now. Thank you.
In terms of the issues that you've set out regarding notification and that, jump forward in terms of in your submission or in other parts of the plan that you're aware of, where there's guidance regarding, is there guidance there regarding notification and what's required rather than this general summary at the front?
I don't think so. No, not from memory. No. So it becomes a fairly fundamental chapter.
That's all I had.
Following up on Commissioner Sinclair's point, by the looks of it, you're very familiar with these provisions. You'll be aware that one of the, you quoted 95A2A, have you thought about 95A2C, which says consent authority must publicly notify if a rule and a plan requires notification? That's the first point, and whether that's in fact what you're seeking.
Are you asking me, are there rules in the plan that require notification? Is that the question?
No, I think the question is, in terms of what you're trying to achieve, mm-hmm. is what you actually need rather than a general statement in the Chapter 1.
Well,
A rule that could bounce off that statutory provision.
Well, that's a good point, yeah. You could have a rule that specified that this, it will... using our wording, but somewhere else, probably in the rural section, stated that things will be notified except in very exceptional cases. Yeah. That's what you say. So a further rule further through the plan. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that sounds like a reasonable idea to back up Chapter 1. Yeah.
Where my question is, would that be the appropriate mechanism to achieve what you're trying to achieve?
To be honest, it's one way of doing it. I don't think you want to overcomplicate the plan if you can help it. Yeah? If you can spell out very clearly in Chapter 1 the council's preferred attitude to notification, subject to the legislation, obviously, then, you know, just start chucking in more rules. But I'm not saying I'm against that. If something could be phrased that could make this even clearer, further in, down in the plan, it would be open to that. Yeah.
The reason why I raise that is that as the staff report on this particular chapter notes that, indeed the legal submissions for the council note that Chapter 1 doesn't have regulatory effect, it's not intended to have regulatory effect, and what you're trying to create is a regulation. That's why, that's the point I want to put to you.
Right, in that case you do need a rule further on in the plan. Yeah, I didn't know that.
And I suppose the other question in relation to building poles, you've taken a strong position that building poles are essential for the rural zone. I think that what the paragraph you focused on has now generalised it, so it's no longer in the rural zone. My question to you is that are building poles required for every application? Are they surplus to requirement for some, and does the plan need to recognise that?
No. No, they need to be there in the rural zone. In the rural zone for every application. You really can't judge the effects until you see the poles.
And in the residential zones?
No. No, they're not necessary in the residential zone.
They might be necessary. Is it going to be case by case?
If something's already zoned residential, that they have as of right development rights, then that's the poles would serve no purpose, I would have thought. Yeah. There are other rules covering, you know, bulk and location. So no, I wouldn't have thought so. No. In the rural lifestyle and rural residential zones, yes, potentially, yes.
There was some discussion about the length of time the poles should stay up, noting that I think we'd all agree to the end of the application with Mr. Cressley, whether that goes for appeal and that they could go for quite some time. No comment on that. You think they should stay up? Obviously, for the whole process.
They tend to get knocked over by cows and the wind, but yeah.
For some time to sit up there a long, long time, and that actually degrades the landscape of the beacon.
They need to be up for the whole of the council notification period, yeah, so that the public, so from the date of notification to the date of the hearing, I think they need to be up. Then there might be a gap before, if there's an appeal, you know. I don't think they have to go, these things take a long time through the court sometimes, so I think they'd have to be up. The problem is that evidence is being written during that appeal period, and people have to. You never quite know when witnesses are going to visit the site to have a look at the poles. Yeah, so it's quite tricky that. Mm. So, you know, they're going to have to be up most of the time. Yeah. But there may be a 2 or 3 weeks after the council hearing where they wouldn't be necessary.
You say very exceptional cases might not require notification. I don't really know any. Have you got any examples of what might?
If it was up to me, I think they'd all be notified. Yeah.
So I have used to that, so I'm saying.
I mean, that would be my honest answer, because this landscape is so precious. But you know, there may be something, some very small development that's superbly tucked away.
So basically anything that might degrade, or anything that might be visual, or I'm just trying to get a guidance of.
Yeah, I mean, well, the rules that the Society support and the policies and objectives that we, that I'll be talking about tomorrow, that the Society will be supporting, are the ones that apply to outstanding natural landscape, Wakatipu Basin at the moment. And these rules allow development in outstanding natural landscape. You have to be clear about that. They don't stop development in outstanding natural landscape. So there may be isolated cases where, you know, it's such a brilliantly planned and executed development, but yeah,
And that lack of necessity would be caused by lack of visual impact?
Well, we have to go back to the legislation. You know, the council says definitely minor effects.
Okay. The boarding poles you mentioned had to be in rural zones. Are you including within that only so now?
Of course. Yeah. The ONF and ONL are landscape categories, they're not zones.